Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Welcome into the Flight Plan Podcast. Tim McMaster here, along with Zach Rosenblatt. Jets coming off another weird, disappointing, like pull your hair out type loss. We're going to break it down. This is the four downs episode of the podcast where we'll pick out four key things and dive into them to talk about the show. It's also December 23rd, which means it's Festivus. No better time to air your grievances then right now, as far as this Jets team goes. I don't know if anybody's going to join us here, Zach, at this point for the live stream. We will see. But how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Two more games left. I imagine they'll all go the same way. All these games keep going with the Jets, where it's close, mistakes, they lose, or they barely beat a bad team. But, you know, another just... there's just been so many games that have gone the way that game did. Rich Cimini, to his credit, he's the best at finding these stats because ESPN has those resources. But he had a stat that this is only the second time since 1940 that a team lost, that a team didn't punt but also didn't score 10 points. It's only the second time since 1940. Like, it's a hard thing to do. So, but it was because they went for it on fourth down so many times and failed, turned the ball over a couple times, like just complete. Ugly, stupid game.
it was rough. All right, let's just get right into the four downs. We're going to get to the offense and how they managed to achieve that feat. But we're going to start on first down with Mike LaFleur's return to New York. I guess you'd call it a triumphant return for him as the Rams get the win. Not exactly a golden offensive performance. Stafford was 14-19, 110 yards passing for the Rams. They did run the ball down the Jets. Kyren Williams, 23 carries, 122 yards. We'll get more into that later in the show too. But more importantly, Zach, than what happened on the field with Mike LaFleur's return, it was comments after the fact. He talked, Garrett Wilson talked. So just get into that. You were in that locker room bringing up Mike LaFleur to these guys. And it was really interesting to hear what they had to say now compared to their thoughts when LaFleur left a couple of years ago.
Yeah, you know, Garrett was asked about it at his press conference with all the reporters in the locker room. And his response was how much he loves Mike and how he thinks about, like, the time they had together and how he maybe took it for granted. And, I mean, that's a pretty clear shot at the guy who replaced him, Nathaniel Hackett. You know, I've reported and I'd heard that he was very unhappy with Hackett, and he's not the only one. I know Breece Hall, even this week, this isn't all Hackett, this is just in general. Somebody brought up to Breece Hall this week that the Jets are last, I believe, in rush attempts in the NFL. And he's like, I mean, when I get the ball, I just do what I can with it. Like, if they don't give me the ball more than whatever, essentially was the quote. And yeah, so that's like the root of it. I think they both, you know, if you rewind back to 2022, the end of the season, they obviously started that, like, the high point of this era was that 6-3 start. They beat the Packers, they beat the Bills. They're 6-3. They're feeling good. And then things kind of fall apart at the end. You deal with the Mike White injury, Zach Wilson coming in and out of the lineup, and Chris Trevor playing 2 years ago today. Chris Trevor, or 2 years ago yesterday, Chris Trevor played against the Jaguars. But they fall apart at the end of the season. The offense is not scoring with Zach Wilson at quarterback. And a lot of the noise is around Mike LaFleur, both media-wise and fans. And then at the end of the season, the star players would meet with, you know, the Jets front office, the bigwigs, Woody, Joe Douglas, Saleh. And a lot of these guys were expressing their discontent with Mike LaFleur as their play caller. I think they thought that they were getting too stale. I think in retrospect, it was probably because of the quarterback. LaFleur, he definitely was flawed. It was not a perfect offensive coordinator. Like,
he was also a first-time play caller.
He was first. He was still learning how to lead, like all of that stuff. I think he probably would say he didn't do everything right, but he clearly was a better option than what they wound up having. And Woody kind of forced Robert to fire LaFleur, and he had a hard time getting any offensive coordinators that were willing to interview. Settles on Hackett to help them get Rodgers. They get Rodgers, and that now Rodgers is essentially offensive coordinator, and Garrett's still not getting the ball like the way he wants. And is under, he only had three targets going into the end of the game, which is mind-boggling. It's because Rodgers is force-feeding Devontae quite a bit. But, anyway, I don't know. Would keeping LaFleur have fixed everything? I don't know. Would Aaron Rodgers have wanted to be a Jet with LaFleur as the offensive coordinator based on the way things went in Green Bay with his brother? I don't know, but I just think LaFleur is very clearly a better offensive coordinator than the guy that replaced him, and he was more creative. And it was just interesting. The Rams, they didn't blow the top off. They had 100 passing yards, and he doesn't even call play. So it's not like he was a reason they won or anything. But just seeing him so happy and coming out of the tunnel, and he's hugging everybody, shaking hands with the reporters that used to grill him, and he's happily talking about how he gets to go back to the warm weather in LA where it's 80 degrees right now, as opposed to here where it's freezing. And so it was just the dichotomy of when he was last year felt like the whole world was in front of the Jets, and now it feels like it's behind them all of a sudden. So
it's fascinating because everything that you just described, and it brings you back to the pick of Zach Wilson, right? If you don't get that pick right, every NFL team, if you have a top five pick and you don't get it right on the quarterback, what happens? Because if Zach Wilson's right, it was clear Michael LaFleur and Zach Wilson were clashing.
Yeah.
So you have that problem, and that leads to LaFleur being gone. And then, but then also you have to go get Aaron Rodgers because Zach Wilson's not good. And then that means you have to get Hackett. And it's all these dominoes, and they all go back to the fact that they didn't draft the right quarterback. Now you can go back to that draft and wonder if the right quarterback was even there to be drafted, right? It's just turned out to not be as strong a class as we thought at the time. But, man, and then you could even go a step further and say, what if they had the veteran quarterback leader for Zach Wilson that rookie year? Because that's the other thing, right? Where they just had Zach Wilson with a first-time play caller, first-time offensive coordinator, and no, nothing else around him. This whole problem we're living in right now seems to just kind of go back to that.
Sure does. Yeah. You trace it back there, and then there's just so many what ifs if certain things go differently over the last couple of years from the Aaron Rodgers thing, or if they don't get Aaron Rodgers, they get Derek Carr instead. What does this look like? If Rodgers doesn't tear his Achilles, if they don't fire Robert Saleh in week 5, all these different things that you wonder if any one of them are different, what happens? Or, if Joe Douglas handles this offseason better and doesn't gash the defensive line in order to get Hassan Reddick, if you actually just keep JFM and Huff, how much better is the defense? And it's just one thing after another, and it all starts at the Zach Wilson moment ultimately. And these people, they survived longer than people usually do, coaches and GMs, when you mess up a pick like they did with Zach. But, this is where we're at, and now they're probably going to have to start over with another rookie quarterback in the very near future. I don't know if that's this year or the year after, but it's kind of like they're back to square one while also having a better supporting cast for whatever rookie they bring in, actually. So maybe it's a better environment for winning if you get the right coach.
And that's a good transition to second down, because we hope whoever the quarterback is next year has a solid left tackle, and that is suddenly in doubt, at least early on. We will find out. We may find out by the time you listen to this podcast, up front as far as that goes, because we are recording this Monday morning about 10 a.m. But Olu Fashanu left the game, foot injury. And the scary part of this, right, Zach, is that like it was immediately ruled that he was out for the game. And that's rare.
Yeah. It's usually a bad sign. It sounds like it's not going to be an Achilles injury, which is always the fear when you hear foot or ankle, because that's usually how it's diagnosed in the moment. An Ulbrich is not really forthcoming immediately after games, or he might not even be this morning. It might just be like we're still waiting on tests or whatever. But I know he got x-rays. He was in the locker room on crutches. That could just be precautionary. Like it's too early to say it'll be serious. I'd be surprised if it wasn't bad enough that he like misses at least the rest of the season. And I don't think there's any reason to force him out there, because as you mentioned, like he's their future. Like he'd been playing really, really well. The offensive line, they were mostly good. They had this crazy, I don't know if this has ever happened before, honestly. Every one of the offensive linemen that played had at least one penalty, like either holding or false start or illegal, whatever. So, and I don't know if I've ever seen that, but yeah, Olu, he's shown some real signs that he's the future, and they finally found like their franchise left tackle. And the Jets, of course, can't have nice things. So it was a scary scene, just not even in terms of what happened on the injury, which I didn't even see, but just the fact that it looked like it could be serious. I think that was pretty traumatizing for this fan base that feels like it can't have nice things. So hopefully it's a minor injury. You can rest him the rest of the way, and then you let him rehab in the offseason. And, you know, I to your point, and I've said this, others have, this offensive line is part of the appeal for any head coach or GM, frankly. So Olu is a big, big part of that, because you have him under rookie control for 4 more years at the very least. And you have AVT under contract, Joe Tippmann, John Simpson, and then you can decide what you want to do with Morgan Moses. But yeah, so hopefully it's not serious. It seems like it's not an Achilles injury, at least, so it's not that serious, which is positive.
Seems like, I mean, would you be shocked to see him playing a game this year, regardless of the severity, even if they come back and say like, oh, it's an ankle sprain, like just rest him, right?
Yeah. I mean, I would, but I don't know. I mean, these players, they have a say in it to a degree, like Breece Hall fighting back from his injuries and now he's full go. But yeah, I mean, there's 2 games left. They're very meaningless, and you're going against 2 teams that have something to play for in the Bills and Dolphins. So, I mean, I know the idea of playing spoiler is fun, and you're trying to help Aaron Rodgers if this is his last 2 games as a Jet go out a certain way. But I would rest Olu, and I would honestly see what you have in Carter Warren. He hasn't really shown much, but these are the last 2 games for him to kind of show that he can be a backup option, and so far he hasn't shown that. And Max Mitchell is the one that went in at left tackle on Sunday. But yeah, so that's kind of what I would do. But I don't know. I can't imagine he'll play the rest of the season, but I could be wrong.
Third down, we go back to that stat. This is an offense that didn't punt the entire game and scored 9 points. Second time since 1940 to repeat the stat. So let's get into the reasons for that, which was, well, they missed an extra point. That's not part of this.
The 99-yard scoring drive, their first drive of the game. Like, it was first an awesome drive. Of the game.
Second quarter, 4th and 1 from their own 33, up 6-0. They go for it. I'm going to be honest, Zach. I think this point in the year with this team, like, heck yeah, like, go for it.
It was more just the thing that keeps confusing me and others is why Breece Hall keeps getting the goal line carries, not Braylon Allen. Like, why not give it to Braylon there? But yeah, it's easy to make fun of Ulbrich and the Jets because their decision making has been so poor in these situations, but they clearly are just kind of in the mode of like, we might as well just keep going for it. The offense was moving, like, they felt pretty good about it. I don't think I think Ulbrich would have been better off just saying, what do we have to lose? As opposed to saying we were trying to be aggressive and blah, blah, blah. And then they had another
third quarter, 4th and 4 from the Rams 13-yard line. So easy chip shot field goal range.
Yeah.
But at that point they were up by 3. So a field goal doesn't really, it puts you up 6.
Yeah.
But they were trying to go up 2 scores. Like, again, if you're a team that's in the battle for the playoff spot, obviously you kick a field goal there, but they're not in that position.
The more annoying, confounding thing is less than the going for it. It's the way they do not run the ball in the red zone. Aaron Rodgers was not good in the red zone yesterday. He was really he wanted to get his 500th touchdown. He got his first one to Devontae. He pretty clearly wanted Devontae to get the 500th. He probably wouldn't admit that, but so he started force feeding him and ignoring Garrett to a degree. Tyler Conklin had a really good game, actually. and shout out to Tyler, new father recently. But yeah, you know, they pass it more in the red zone than any team in the NFL. I think it's close to 75% of the time. And that's just not how you win. Like, you need to mix it up in there. And that's Aaron Rodgers. Like, he's getting to the line and he's changing calls or he's calling them himself. And I mean, look, Aaron Rodgers pushed back on this when Brian Costello asked him about it. In these cold games, you're supposed to run the ball more. You're supposed to lean on the run more. And Aaron, like, pushed back on that. I mean, he played in Green Bay for a long time. It was successful, obviously. So he knows about playing in the cold. But
he had some great running games in Green Bay,
though. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And they dropped back, I believe, 44 or 46 times and only had 20 carries total. Like, they passed the ball. He had over 40 passing attempts again. He's had a lot of pass attempts this season for someone who's only had one 300-yard game. But
I didn't think he was a team from L.A., went with a run the ball.
Yeah. And it worked.
Yeah.
Yeah. So confusing in terms of the offensive game plan. The defense was banged up and they struggled against the run. But the offense, yeah. I mean, I don't think Aaron overall had a very good game. He started off pretty well. There was a point where he left and went to the medical tent. And then after that, it seemed he was back to the old Aaron being afraid to do certain things. But I don't know. I'm very curious to see how these last two games go in terms of him and how he looks and what he says as the year ends.
That's going to be really interesting. Overall, 2 for 5 on those fourth downs. They also missed the field goal. So those are just what went into the fact that they had this historically weird play where they didn't punt the whole game and managed to barely score any points. Fourth down, the defense, which obviously did a great job against Stafford, 14-19, 110, but he only threw it 19 times because what we just said, right? The Rams were dedicated to the run. Kyren Williams, 23 carries, Buck 22 and a touchdown. So the defense struggling against the run on Sunday.
Yeah, they were without Quinnen Williams. He worked out pregame. He didn't practice all week. It would have been bad to play him. But anytime he doesn't play, you miss him. Like, you had Solomon Thomas and Javon Kinlaw and Michael Clemens starting. And there was one point where they had, I think, Brady McGregor, Leonard Taylor, Bruce Hector, and Michael Clemens as their defensive line, just to show you, like, how far this group has fallen. Hassan Reddick, invisible again. I think he had one pressure, no tackles. He's just been an absolute – he has a half a sack in 9 games, whatever it is.
He's just devastated his whole career.
It's just bonkers. We spoke to him maybe once or twice, and that probably will be all. So let's say he won't be winning Media Good Guy Award. Yeah, you know, the defense, Sauce's hamstring injury flared up and he left the game. DJ Reed played really well. But yeah, ultimately they weren't passing the ball very much and the defensive line got no pressure. There were some missed tackles. I feel like Quincy Williams hasn't made like a splashy play in a few weeks, and that's when the defense is at the best too. So they were like okay, but they were kind of put in some tough spots. Like, they field position was really bad. The Jets went for it on that fourth down at their own 33. Aaron Rodgers had the terrible sack fumble where he held onto the ball way too long, and both of those led to touchdowns from the Rams, and that's the difference in the game ultimately.
So those are the four downs. We did this quick this week.
I know.
I guess we're at that point in the season. We're not going to have another episode this week because the holiday on Wednesday, unless something crazy happens, then we'd get together for an emergency. But as far as regularly scheduled pods, we'll be back next Monday. But with two to go, Zach, it's an interesting two. They can't really play spoiler with the Bills. I mean, the Bills are what they are. They're not going to get the number one seed.
True.
So you can't knock them out of that. They're going to win the division going away.
Yeah.
So that's just just a game. But the Dolphins game could be a situation where they could play spoiler. So at least there'd be something there. And they've obviously had such tough goes against the Dolphins that we'll see how that goes. But when you look at 2 weeks to go, you know, you think about like Olu continuing to progress at this point. Yeah. Maybe we'd rather not see Olu play anymore because we want to keep him healthy. So I feel like we're running out of things to like focus in on and watch during these games. But so give me something.
I mean, there's a couple. So Aaron actually, he had an interesting comment yesterday about, you know, being curious to see which players over these last two games really give it their all, and you know, the whole who's just going to like, you know, clock out and look ahead to next year and all that stuff. I mean, I'm curious to see what Aaron looks like. Ultimately, watching Aaron, seeing how he plays and how that influences the Jets' decision is something to keep an eye on if they ever start using Malachi Corley at some point. That would be something. Olu, Braylon Allen, these young guys, Quantes Diggers, like hopefully these guys start to get snaps. But otherwise, it's mostly a curiosity of who on this team is even going to be here next year. And I feel like a lot of these guys are not. So a lot of their starters are not, if you just look across the board, especially on defense. So it's going to be a lot different team. I lean towards this probably being the last two games of the Aaron Rodgers as a Jet era. So if you've enjoyed them, embrace these last two games. And if you have not enjoyed them, then also embrace these last two games. Yeah. But yeah, so we'll have stuff to talk about, and I'm working on something not really Jets related, which we've alluded to.
Jets adjacent.
Jets adjacent, a secret story. Nothing to do with Jets dysfunction or anything like that. I promise it's something about somebody that I think Jets fans are curious about. So that'll hopefully be dropping in the next couple of weeks, and we can talk about that one day too.
Yeah, when that comes up, we'll get Dane Brugler on. We'll talk about that range. We were saying before we started the pod, when you look at this draft, maybe it's not as top heavy as drafts have been recently, but there could be depth. The Jets right now, number 8, so they didn't move either direction.
Yeah,
still sitting in that 8 spot, which you would think is a good spot to get. You know, who knows? The good thing about this draft is it's not like, oh, we needed to be in the top 3 to get one of those quarterbacks, because those quarterbacks don't seem to be there. So, you know, who are the through the process after the college season ends, of like, you know, people's opinion of these quarterbacks always changes between the end of the college season, through the combine, workouts, towards the draft. You see guys move a lot. Michael Penix last year, right? Yeah. And Bo Nix, and these guys, like Bo Nix is maybe the perfect example.
Yeah, it worked
out. I think not considered a first rounder going into the, maybe even the draft, the Broncos take him right at round 10.
13. Right? 13. Yeah.
And terrible start to the season, but now he's starting to look like he's a legitimate NFL. Now, it's nice to have the coach that he has as far as quarterback.
Yeah. That's a part of it, yeah.
but that's all like part of it. So it'd be great to have Dane on to think about like who Dane thinks should be the target in that 8 to 10 range. You would imagine they're not going to drop below 8 with the Bills and Dolphins coming up.
Yeah.
Maybe they can, although that's not going to help their strength schedule. So
there's so many teams with bad records that it's like hard for them to move up too. So
yeah, and everyone's got three wins, and yeah, and they have 4, and their strength of schedule is going to get better playing the Bills and Dolphins.
True, yeah.
Which hurts you, right?
Yeah, so it does. Yeah, the lower your, because the idea is like if you have a bad record against bad teams, then you're worse essentially.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it feels like 8 may be the spot. That's just, they may be locked in there at 8. So, but that's not a terrible draft spot to be for sure. All right. Anything else?
No, I think that pretty much does. I know it's a quicker one today, but yeah, well, they got the Bills this week. I'll be in Buffalo. I'll be going to Bar Bill, which is the best wing spot in Buffalo. And I will share my escapades with you all because they are delightful.
Don't break a table. All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to everybody next week, unless something big comes up. Thanks for tuning in to the Flight Plan Podcast.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your 2 free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.